Hey, Victors, welcome to this week's Victory Show. If this is the first time you're joining us, I'm Travis Cody, bestselling author of 16 books, and I've had the privilege of helping hundreds of business consultants, founders, and entrepreneurs write and publish their own bestselling books. And during that journey, I've discovered a really fascinating pattern. A lot of businesses hit a revenue plateau, 500,000 a year, and they really 500,000 to a million a year, and they really struggle to break through that. So on this show, I sit down with some of the world's most successful CEOs, leaders, and business owners to uncover the strategies that they use to overcome those plateaus and scale their businesses to new heights so that you can do the same thing. So if you're looking to learn from the best and get actionable insights that can propel your business forward, you're in the right place. As always, if you like this episode, please hit the like button, subscribe, and turn on those notifications. So today, we are going to have probably the most entertaining show we've had in a while because our guest is a true creative powerhouse, someone who knows how to entertain, inspire, and make us laugh while questioning the world around us. Megan Asher is a SAG actor, writer, stand-up comedian, and podcaster who's built a massive following of over 300,000 fans by creating hilarious and thought-provoking digital content. So whether she's performing on stage, acting in films, on TV series on Amazon, True TV, Kevin Hart's LOL Network, or just diving into the latest pop culture conspiracies on our hit podcast, Popspiracy, Megan brings her sharp wit and fearless curiosity to everything that she does. And here's the thing. Megan isn't just an in front of the camera type of person. She's behind it too. As the founder of Wake and Make Media, she's produced three Amazon Prime scripted series and has worked with major brands like Miss Universe, MTV, and Ciroc, helping businesses craft compelling high-quality video content. Now, her journey started behind the scenes working at Steve Carell's Carousel production company. And since then, she's carved out her own unique path in the entertainment industry, from stand-up comedy at the Comedy Store and the Hollywood Improv to directing, writing, producing original content. Megan does it all. And she does it with humor, intelligence, and a relentless drive to create. So let's dive into some insightful and hilarious conversation about entertainment, social media, more importantly, the art of storytelling and how we can use it to grow your business. Megan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I need you to like follow me around. And that sounds really, that I'm flattered by that intro.
You're like, oh, I kind of sound kind of cool when you put that all down like, on paper.
She, yeah.
I think most people that have lived through the Hollywood game is like, there's a level of trauma that goes through there's parts of your life you sort of forget because you're like, oh yeah, I guess I did do some cool stuff when I was there.
It's so accurate. I believe that's so accurate.
From an industry standpoint, Hollywood is probably one of the most brutal things you could go through, from ego wise to self acceptance wise. It's interesting. So this is what I love about your background is you started off in entertainment and you've done some things that most people only dream of. I mean, you've worked with Amazon, you've gotten scripted shows on Amazon, like people, you know, spend their whole careers and don't have that. But you then were able to take those skills and parlay them into a fantastic business that's also helping businesses just by simply helping them be a little more entertaining and a little more authentic in their content instead of so much like Madison Avenue, just as you know, like that. Mm-hmm. Sterile advertising is probably the way to do it. We had this conversation before we started here about a client going, we don't do that because we're a serious business, right? Exactly. I have a feeling that the world is had enough of serious businesses.
Exactly.
So let's walk me through that. Let's start back in the day. So you moved to LA primarily to be in the entertainment industry. You wanted to be an actor.
Yes. Yeah. So it was grew up like very academic. I think I basically applied to an acting conservatory senior year of college and was going to go to law school. Found out I got in at graduation and it was kind of like a childhood dream, but never thought I'd actually pursue it. I used to go to theater camp, but it was like kind of a joke I didn't think it would take it that seriously, but I got in and I was like, you know what, let me move to LA for a year. I'm going to regret this on my deathbed if I don't. So
what's the conservatory you got into?
It's called American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Yeah, that's a good one. Robert Redford, right?
Yeah, a bunch of older actors.
I was say one of them. I know he's one of them, but that's the first one.
Yeah, no. And it was
it turned out a few talent pieces of talent. So that's fantastic. You got accepted.
Yeah. So I was kind of surprised. It was like I auditioned, didn't think anything about it. And then so I got in, I was like, I'm gonna move to LA for a year and act and see what happens. So I went to this conservatory. It was really intense. It was like 10 hours a day of, you know, acting, singing, dancing, speech, whatever.
So you were like went in total immersion.
Yeah. Like going from like an English major in college and Spanish major, it was just like so different. And then during that time, I definitely realized I really loved comedic acting more than dramatic. I just gravitated toward that. I've always been really into comedy. And then that is around that same time, the first year I was there, one of my friends dragged me to do stand-up comedy. I was going through a bad breakup, and he was like, just get on stage and just vent. And took a shot of tequila and then vented a lot. And I was like, wait, that's actually really cathartic. I like this. So I basically, after that, I spent like, I'd go at least 2-3 times a week to an open mic, spent the next like 5-7 years performing stand-up while also auditioning and doing improv comedy at Upright Citizens Brigade, which is like an improv school. You know, sitting around waiting for auditions is very stressful. Like you said, it could really harm your ego. I also just think I typically am a little bit more business-minded, so I was getting really bored and burnt out. So I applied for jobs at production companies to learn more than just acting. I would always write, so I wrote in college. I used to write like poetry and screenplays, basically. I started writing stuff with friends, and I worked for a carousel production company, and then started a mini production company with a friend where we would create music videos and kind of just like immersed myself in creating content. And it was like a year of film school by teaching myself, by just being on set. I think it's like a great way to learn. And so from there, I was like, you know what? I really love all aspects of content creation. And then I just kept, while continuing to act, I kept writing. I teamed up with my now husband, and we launched what is now Wake and Make Media. Around 2018, we created two series. He was working at WME at the time, a talent agency. And so we created a few series on Amazon. I worked with Kevin Hart's LOL Network, and I just kept writing, producing, acting, kind of tried it all. That's, yeah.
What were the series you did on Amazon?
One is called Verified, one is called Trying, and one is called All My Friends.
Nice. So yeah. What was it in working with Steve Carell's production company? What are some of the big lessons that you had there? Because I'm assuming at that point in time, you were primarily all in front of the camera. Was that your sort of your first experience into like a peek behind the curtain?
Yeah. In college, I interned at MTV, and I had worked a little bit on set. I also was interning at like a PR company, and so I saw a little bit. But that was definitely like I got thrown in the deep end. Ironically, I wanted to work on comedy when I was there. And the producer I was put with, I ended up working on very serious like series and documentary, like political series and a documentary about ISIS.
Wow. All right. So, yeah. It's a little hard to find some comedy in that one.
Polar opposite. But I learned a ton. I had to read so many scripts. I was traveling to DC and just learned like really all aspects of filmmaking, from like interviewing people on camera to producing. I learned a lot about producing, filming itself. You know, I'm not a cinematographer, but just how to film on the go.
Yeah.
And really strengthened my writing skills, directing skills. So that was like a lot. I learned a lot during that time.
Wow. And so during this process, was there a point where you started to really kind of feel like, man, I really have a strength to this production side of things? Was that year of making it that you said, oh, because you have more control over what you're doing, would that become more appealing to you?
Yeah, I'm like a little bit of a control freak and don't like.
So you're perfect for production.
I don't like waiting around on people to tell me like yes or no. And I had written scripts with a few, you know, actually bigger screenwriters who had done stuff. Like one of my writing partners had worked on Usual Suspects and the movie like Mordecai, like just a bunch of bigger films. And I was like, oh, this is a shoe-in. We're going to get our scripts made. And little did I know that is so far from how it works. You keep getting told no and no and no and no. I was like, but these are great scripts. Why do I have to wait around for somebody to tell me yes? Like I could be, and I would see friends waiting like 20, 30 years.
Yeah, everybody's waiting.
Yeah. And it was depressing to me. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to do something myself, even if it's on a smaller level. And then seeing stuff being made at Carousel Productions, I was like, oh, you can't, you know, obviously a big budget helps, but there's, you know, there's crowdsourcing or crowdfunding. There's different ways to do it. And if you have like a crafty group of friends or a group of people who can all contribute, you can make something decent for, especially if it's like a short.
Yeah. You know, that was what, so when I worked with Jonathan Crane in the development, I remember out of respect for the screenwriter, I'm not going to say who it is, but we were trying to acquire a script from A-list screenwriter. And I remember having the call with him where I was like, and so, you know, we're point where we want to put the offer together. Like, what do you want for the screenplay? And I never forgot his response, because his response was like, dude, if you can put a thing in writing that the damn thing's going to get produced, I will sell you my screenplay for $1. Yeah. And his previous 5 scripts he'd sold for over $1 million. And I laughed, and he was like, I'm serious. And he said, he's like, Travis, do you know how many scripts my partner and I have sold for over $1 million? And I'm like, a lot. And he's like, 22. We've sold over 22 scripts for $1 million. So like for people that are not in the Hollywood space, like you don't spend $1 million unless that thing is like amazing. And he's like, and you know how many of those have been made? Two of them have been made. And I've never forgot that of like this. And that's actually one of the reasons why I started writing more, because I thought, well, what if he had taken all those screenplays and then also wrote the book? Because then he can publish the book and his story is still out there and it's not buried. And I just think of all my friends that have got all their scripts sitting around and amazing scripts. Not anymore. So, but you're to your point, right? When you don't control that process, then you are waiting a lot. And I think that's really interesting, because just now it didn't occur to me about the sort of the relation between actors in Hollywood and a lot of business owners, where they start their business and then they're just kind of like, they're waiting for clients to show up, right? And what do you guys do with Wake and Make? It's like you're being proactive to actually get out there and bring people in. So let's talk a little bit about that. So you met your future husband, and had you guys been filming some just like smaller projects and that like together over a couple of years? And if so, then okay, at what point in that time did you go, hey, maybe we could make something out of this?
Well, it's funny because he was working at WME first in finance and then at their creative department. And on the side, he's like he just doesn't stop working, which is, you know, good and bad sometimes. But he literally was like filming every weekend on like a side project, because he actually had a production company with a friend, and they found me on Instagram, and we had some mutual friends. So it wasn't totally random, but they cast me in a series that actually is also on Amazon. And the location dropped out the day before. My roommate was out of town. They're like, hey, we really need to film in a bedroom. And I was like, okay, you guys can use my apartment. And so I literally met him in my room for the first time. This sounds ridiculous.
Whole camera crew.
Yeah, whole camera crew, like 10 people in my bedroom. And I was like, why, what am I, but it turned out good. It was fine. But we met on set. So he's a really good cinematographer. So he was filming, I was acting. And basically months went by, we started dating, but just basically everything that he was really good at, I was not, and vice versa. Like he would physically film and direct more than I would. I would write and act and produce. And so the production company he was in was kind of fizzling, and we just kind of started talking about it, and then immediately just got to work making stuff. It kind of just like happened naturally. It was organically, which is the best way.
And you worked well together, and your strengths complement each other. So that's awesome. So when did Make and Wake start to pivot into creating content for content creators and also for businesses that were looking to, you know, obviously every business has got to be doing content. You guys are coming from it at a different angle. That's a bit of a shift from shooting, you know, series on Amazon to like, hey, let's go help, you know, so-and-so create, you know, some commercials.
Sure.
What point did that start to happen?
So it was basically during COVID. It was funny. We had like kind of mentioned it end of 2019. Hey, on the side, we could always shoot commercials, because people in LA had asked us to shoot commercials and stuff. And then COVID happened. And at the time, my family was in North Carolina in Charlotte, and we went and stayed with them, and we're like, I don't know. We just spent so much time brainstorming how we could do this, not in the realm of Hollywood. And at the same time, I had been creating like a TikTok series with a friend that ended up like blowing up. We got like 500,000 followers. Long story short, I like landed a Spotify deal out of it. And we were just like, wait, we can like create our own thing. You don't need to go through an agency or like a Hollywood gatekeeper. We could do this for other creators, because it kind of was working on me. And we could also do it for brands and businesses. And that kind of started only because my dad had started a company at the time, a CBD company. He's like, can you guys help me make content for this and like market it?
Wow.
And simultaneously during COVID, because a lot of business owners were struggling just in the area, by word of mouth, people were like, wait, can you film this commercial for my company? So it was this weird thing that it just happened. And within a year, we're like, wait, we're kind of doing marketing.
It's not weird. The universe called you.
Yeah, we're doing digital marketing. And then we really started learning about, you know, ads, email marketing, because we noticed a lot of marketing agencies lacked the creative side. And that's what we, you know, pride ourselves on. So they would outsource creative even to like, you know, the Philippines or just other countries, and the creative wasn't good. But we did realize early on that you can't just film something creative and let it sit there. You need to distribute it for those people, whether that's on social media or by ads. Now we do like connected TV, stuff like that.
That is amazing. Okay, so this is a pretty quick learning curve from you to go. You're stuck inside, put brainstorming. How do we do this outside of Hollywood? You just keep doing stuff and things start showing up. Now, so you, it's just the two of you. Like, at what point did it occur to you of like, oh, this is a real business? And then what was sort of the growth over, let's say, the first couple of years? What did that look like?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a challenge. I grew up with a lot of people in my family are serial entrepreneurs. So I got very good mentorship. I still do. So I had like a bit of background in terms of like, I've seen my dad and my grandpa like scale multiple companies. So I just basically was like, all right, we got to go, you know, I think my husband and I are both very intense. So we went like 0 to 100 and we're like, we need to set up some sort of like client acquisition system. We immediately hired an editor because we were like, we can't sit around and edit all day. We started really like, literally at one point driving around, like dropping off business cards and at different businesses. And at the time we were in Charlotte. So we actually quickly built this business up in Charlotte. And we were only there for a year before we moved to Florida. So it was hard because we've kind of had to restart this twice now. Both times have like taught us a lot in terms of, you know, we learned early on, it's easier if you niche down usually. Going sure. after any type of business isn't usually going to like help you scale. So we learned basically a lot of like health and wellness businesses were what was working. And so we were just lucky enough we're good at running ads. We started running Meta ads, Google ads. We just kept growing. And as we grew, you know, hired a project manager, then another project manager, somebody helped to help with operations. Now we have a team of like 6 editors. This was all over. I mean, this wasn't overnight. It's been...
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's a learning, steep learning curve. So I love the fact, though, that's like, it's so interesting. And like the visualization I have in my mind is like, you're this creative little fly that's trying to get out, and the entrepreneurs in your family, they're like, you can have that there, but now come back in and let's do all of these things 100%. Together. So now you're able to use this like amazing skill and passion you have for entertainment. And you get to do it in a way that lets you be in control and make a lot of money at the same time. I mean, what a fantastic sort of journey and a blend. Now, from a consumer standpoint, like that really excites me because a lot of marketing is really boring. And so the fact that you're now out there helping people look good, but also in a very entertaining way. So I love how you're just kind of like, so you learned Google ads and Facebook ads. Like some people will like spend years trying to learn that. So did you learn that yourself or did you find people that knew it and just had them do it for you?
No, I'm very big on seeking out experts in anything, almost like to a fault where like my husband's like, stop paying all these people to teach you things. I really like, if I want to learn something, I was like, no, we need to like learn from someone who really knows what they're doing. So, I mean, we took a ton of programs. My husband also, he did have a background, 1 in finance, 2, like he worked at the creative department at William Morris Endeavor. Sure. He was familiar with like content distribution and ads because they work with, I believe it's called 360 over 90. It's an ad agency in Hollywood. Yeah. So he did have some experience, which helped. Like he didn't go in blindly. And then he taught me that like ads are not my expertise, him and our ad team that they do that. So, but we took, I remember there was one course when we were like in lockdown that we took and it was all about, I don't remember the name of it. It was like this $1,500 course. And it was like 20 hours long. And it was all about like helping filmmakers distribute their content through ads basically. So it was like,
we're already doing this.
Yeah. So and ads also were definitely a learning curve. Cause I remember Facebook, for instance, has like changed their ad buying like so many times. Like it's constantly evolving just the way it's done. I think in the beginning, another thing that helped is we hired somebody who was an ad expert and then he kind of taught us stuff along the way. So now my husband and an ad person we've hired.
Sure.
Do our ads.
But so I think what you're saying there, like, I just want to reiterate it because I don't, for people listening, like just the importance of what you said is that, you know, you need a skill in something, you take a course or two to get familiar with it, but then you hire an expert to teach you one-on-one. Like yeah. I do that in my own business. And I found that that is the shortest path to being at least getting proficiency in something, maybe not mastery, but just hiring somebody one-on-one and paying them extra money to do that. So I think that's really smart. And I think the other part of that is too, is this concept of using entertainment as our advertising. And I don't know if you're familiar with Tai Lopez?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So Tai Lopez, for those watching the show, I haven't heard of him. He's the first one that I know of that took an ad and made it go viral. He's and like, I remember at the time, like, it was driving all the influencers batshit crazy because they were just like, how's this stupid video with the guy in his garage going viral? So I wrote some sales copy for Ty. And part of my deal with him was there was a whole room of copywriters and they were offering him all of this money and they were all taking it because he was so big. And I took like a tiny little fee and everybody thought it was dumb. But part of my deal was I want this fee and then I want dinner with Ty. And so when I eventually had dinner with Ty, I asked him, because at that point in time, that video had just crossed 650 million views. And so I was asking him about, like, okay, so how did you do that? And this changed my view on marketing forever, because he said, okay, Travis, you're a marketer, so I'll share this with you because you'll get it. He's like, most people don't. He's like, people don't realize. He's like, that was an ad. It was selling my $67 course. And when you bought my $67 course, I had a $67 a month membership. He's like, so I had 7 different versions of that video. And we tested all of them and that one did the best. And he's like, and I had a small ad budget and I just told the team for this first 6 months, whatever money we make back from that ad, let's just put it back into ads. So, you know, the first month they spent $10,000 and they made $12,000. And so then they spent $12,000 and they made $20,000 and they made $20,000, spent $20,000 and made $50,000. And he said, so how did I get a video to 650 million views? I spent $20 million on YouTube video ads for that one video. And he's like, now most people are going to say, oh, that's stupid. That is the dumb. Why would you spend $20 million on a stupid ad? And he's all, but as of today, I've got 111,000 people in my $67 per month membership program. Do the math. Yeah. My brain was just like, you have how many people in your program? 100,000. So, and you know, yeah. And that's at that point in time, I was like, well, there's the content now can be so much more than just, oh, I've got to put content and share some sort of thing. Like when you're strategic with it, there's this whole other level of things that you can do with it. Now, with what Wake and Make Media does, if you can do that and also be entertaining and it also looks good, right? Because Ty's was just a selfie video in the garage.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you bring some production value into that. So what's like the ideal ecosystem then for what you guys are doing? Because you're obviously doing content, but then you're also doing ads and you're also doing email. So let's say that I hire you and I say, hey, I want to start creating content about helping business owners write and publish a book. I haven't done much content yet. So like what's sort of the process you're going to walk me through and in what order to sort of achieve the best result that you think would be possible with that?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So first of all, we have different like packages. So, but basically just overall to explain like how it works, we'd sit with you and say, and a lot of people who do come to us already do have established brands and businesses, but we have worked with people who don't. So the first thing is like a brand, you know, strategy, sit down, what's your messaging, who are you trying to target, a whole workup of like, you know, if you have like a brand lookbook or just your vibe, who you want to go after, what your goals are, just so we really understand it. From there, we typically make between 10 to 20 videos a month for our clients, depending on what they want. Mm-hmm. And then we turn some of those pieces of content into ads. So we'd sit with you and brainstorm the types of content you would want, types of videos you would want.
So if you phase one, branding, phase two, content.
Yes. And if you have an idea, and again, I'm being a little vague just because everyone seems
to be. Yeah, I've got that. But 80% of the ecosystem, like I'm talking about the ideal scenario of like starting from scratch and like building something out. Like if I come in, I'm like, hey, I'm all in on this thing. And you're just like, okay, great. We're going to phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four.
So the content phase is sitting with you and basically coming up. I mean, I'm usually like the content person who will brainstorm. We have copywriters and stuff who could like, you know, will really write it. But in terms of coming up with the concepts, I'll look at what other people in your industry are doing. I'll look at, do you want something a little more fun? What's your vibe? I love doing like more comedic type of content or just like something a little unusual. Like we have a peacekeeping client who he basically goes in when HR can't handle a situation. We were creating content for him and he's like, this, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know how to create content about this. And so we had him basically just react to really different, difficult clients or customers on camera. And we created a series of videos around that. And he actually ended up picking it up. We just helped him film a reality show, like a concept for them. But not to like go off tangent, but basically like, depending on the vibe you're going for, if it's a lot of our health and wellness clients or med spa clients, which we have a ton of, they'll want very informational videos, which are a little, more serious, but they're
more information videos with pretty people.
Yes. And like explaining their products, if they have new machines or cryo or cool sculpting or, you know, everything, Botox. Sometimes we'll do trend videos. So that's the content part. After that, which we really urge our clients to distribute the content.
So we got the content, we got distribution. What are some distribution channels available? I mean, obviously, just the social media channels in general.
Or so we have paid and organic. So organic, you're going to want to do social media. We post on Instagram if you want to. Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn.
Yeah, all the big ones. Yeah.
Yeah, we've even done Pinterest. And, you know, just a consistent posting schedule. And then paid, which we urge our clients to do. I'd say 99% of them do. So we'll run meta ads, which is, you know, Facebook, Instagram. We'll run YouTube, Google ads. And
your team does all of the running that forum. So you're like a little mini traffic agency in addition to the content.
Yeah, wow. So we'll run the ads. And then in addition to that, you know, depending, I'd also say the majority of our clients also want to have some sort of email campaign going. So, you know,
how lazy are your clients? Gosh, they just want you to do everything.
Yeah, you know, we'll be the one-stop shop. And that's why we niche down, because we're like, we're trying to do this for every industry that comes to us. And this is totally insane. So it was way too much. So now health and wellness is the main one. But yeah, email. And then, so that's distribution. And then we recently introduced connected TV ads. So, because we're like, cable's passe. And it's funny because my parents are like, you guys need to get your clients on cable. And I was like, no one watches that. But it's funny. We ended up.
Connected TV is becoming a big thing.
Yeah, because it's streaming. So it's the ads that you see if you're watching Hulu is Netflix doing it? No.
Netflix is. Yeah, Netflix, Disney Plus, and now Netflix has an ad supported tier. And Prime also has now your ability to build your own channels inside of Prime, which is really interesting.
And a few of our clients have wanted to promote their stuff on TikTok Shop and Amazon Marketplace. So we'll do ads, but that's not the majority.
So that's super. So the idea is I'd come in, you help me branding, we film the content, and then you guys eventually sort of take over that ecosystem and help me start running the ads to just get me the result of getting new clients in the door. That's the goal, essentially.
Exactly. And our next step is trying to work with a team that actually like closes for you. That'd be like an all-in-one. That's like what this year we're trying to do. So we'll see. But and a lot, some of our clients don't want the paid, and we just post organically for them, and then they build an organic following.
So do you have other content creators reaching out to you, asking you what you're doing?
That's an interesting question. More so businesses.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. A few have reached out to us on like YouTubers or, cause it doesn't, it like not directly on our like Wake and Make channel, because we need to do what we do for other clients for us. You know what I mean?
You need to hire you for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes I've had it more on my personal, I create like goofy videos. So
you're also to the point where you're not barely 4 years into this run. So, I mean, you're kind of right where you need to be. Like, you've scaled crazily. So let's talk about that as well. Like, what have been some of the challenges as you've had to build not just a team, but teams across multiple disciplines?
Yeah, it's a lot of challenge. It's like every day you're just like, I mean, again, I saw my grandpa and dad go through this. So I know, like, you know, it's like one
you
day
knew it was coming.
Yeah. I'm just like, I would see my other day. He's just like, it's the best day ever. The next, he's like, oh. So like, I grew up around this, and I know it's a yo-yo, like being an entrepreneur. And there's definitely been times where we're like, I'm just like, I'm going to like work at a coffee shop. Like, I can't do this. Like, it's too stressful. But there's so many challenges being an entrepreneur. Like, I mean, it's great because you have your own schedule, but it's also, you're constantly working. It's hiring people who can help you scale, finding the right people. That's been a huge learning curve. You know, hiring friends isn't always the best idea. Hiring, again, like the wrong type of people who kind of overpromise, underdeliver, you know, running, especially in the beginning, running ads that just aren't working and clients are getting mad, and, or the way that they, a lot of times, which still happens, is clients not really understanding that they need to like let go of the reins a little in terms of marketing and just let us.
That has probably been the biggest theme, I think, in this show with everybody I talk to. Like, when I ask what's the top three pieces of advice you can give, I think 100% of people have said that. Or when I say what are some of the things that hold businesses and business owners from scaling, and every single person has said not knowing how to let go of stuff is what's keeping them from growing.
Yeah. One, in terms of like working with clients who kind of like are telling us what to do, even though we know it's wrong, and trying to find that balance of like not offending them, but also saying like, hey, we'll try it your way, but it's not going to work. And then it doesn't work, and just that. But then also you know, us doing stuff that like we need to change.
So what are some, let's say, like, what are the top two or three no-nos for when it comes to content creation? What are the things that companies that are doing the content game, what are two or three things you see people doing that you're like, oh, please, no, don't do that. Stop.
Yeah. A lot of it is like the stock photos drive me crazy, like the Canva stock photos. And then they'll come to us and be like, okay, we just want you to run ads on our creative, but don't touch the creative. It's good. And we're like, it's okay. You know,
no, it's a Canva ad. It's not good.
Yeah. And just, it's like a million companies, especially med spas, you'll see the same stock photo on all of them. That's not going to differentiate you. We used to work with, before we niched down, we used to work with restaurants who would post a lot of content, but it just didn't look appealing. Like, honestly, if anything, it made their restaurant look unappealing, just not, you know, like not getting the lighting right or just not really getting angles that look good. Another thing is just not being consistent in your content creation, which is really hard. And that's why a lot of people do hire us, because we're doing it for them. And even I know as a content creator myself, it's really hard to stay consistent. So, but if you're not like keeping up with your audience, people drop off. So those are usually the three biggest things we see. A lot of the main issue is the stock photo thing, or them not wanting to spend money on high quality content creation, which is fine. Like, you can film yourself, like you said, the Tai Lopez video, and it can go viral. You don't need like a crazy cinema camera, but just kind of knowing the lighting, knowing what you're going to say, being authentic. If you're putting out a message that's completely unaligned with like how you're feeling or what your business is trying to do, it feels awkward.
Yeah, for sure. So where in this process did you get the inklings to write a book? And how did that, what was that process, and how did that come out of this?
I've always wanted to write a book.
So let's show everybody your book, because I love the title's one of the best titles I think I've seen in a long time.
That's Nate. That's very nice. Thank you. Punchlines to Profit. And it's how to leverage the power of comedy to create revenue generating content. I've always wanted to write a book. I was an English major in college. I used to write poetry and, like, I don't know, for fun, I would write children's books and stuff just on the side. But I just kept thinking about it. I don't know why, it just kept popping into my head. And I wanted to write a book about comedy, probably because I was being very business minded and I wanted a creative outlet. But then I thought about it. I was just like, I think there's something unique that we've done is combine comedy with digital marketing. So I was like, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I actually worked with a book coach who's great. His name's Jake Helfer. He runs, it's called Big Idea to Bestseller, but I found him just on Instagram, and he basically, you know, you write the entire thing yourself, but it more so just like kept me on track of writing.
You check in once a week and kick your butt and be like, where'd you get to? Why are you slacking off?
Because I had started stuff, books before, and you just don't finish. And this was like, hey, you have like 8 months and it's going to be finished, whether you like it or not. Like, you have to finish the book.
It's going
to
drag you kicking and screaming to pass over the finish line.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, how to even like write different types of chapters and what to write about. Like, it helped me really narrow my focus and actually complete it.
And you went through the process in about 8 months?
It took about 8 months. Yeah, I worked on it. I wouldn't say 7 days a week, at least like four, but it's very, I mean, this isn't like that long of a book, but it just made me realize if you're consistent, I think anyone can write a book. And I also think writing a book, you know, more than anyone, I'm sure, is.
That's my life. Absolutely. Sure. Yeah. And it is. I think it's just like everything, right? So with you, you've got, when clients come on, you've got an onboarding process, and your content creation's got a process, and ads, you've got a process, right? So when people work with me, you're writing books, like, I have a process. How do I have 16 books at my age, right? Because I have a process, right? It took me 4 books to figure that out. But then once I figured it out, I was like, this isn't actually that difficult. But again, just going back to the Hollywood, right? You know, when you're getting ready to produce something, there's a process you can follow and get a reasonable result. You just follow that. And so it's the same with the book. When you plug things in and kind of, you can make it go faster, make it easier. The main thing is just showing up and doing the darn work.
Yeah, that's the hardest part. And 16 is very impressive. I give you a lot of credit, because that's like, that's a lot. One, I was like, okay, I need to take a break.
Yeah, that'll do. I was that way after my first book. I took a pretty big break. And then my second book, I took a big break. And then I'll share the story. I haven't really shared this story publicly, but I have, my process is a 6-step process. And I called it the movies process, because I was in Hollywood forever. The process process. Most of my clients that I work with will go from, I have an idea, to we can get them ready to publish on Amazon in about 4 months. That's the average. Some take longer. I've had some do it faster. But I actually learned that the model that I use from Sally Kellerman, who was Jonathan Crane's wife. And I had written 2 books, and my second book, I had a publisher, and it was a miserable experience because it's deadlines and, you know, that I didn't set. And it wasn't any fun. And Sally got her deal to write her memoir. And I used to be in the office, and I'd walk by her office, and she's in there laughing hysterically and dancing around. And I'm like, what's going on in here? She's like, oh, I'm working on my book. And my brain is just like, man, when I was working on my book, there was no dancing around and there was no laughter for weeks at a time. Like, so I just started asking her questions about her process. And it occurred to me, she approached writing a book like an actress, not like a writer. And her process was completely different. And that sort of rattled me, where I was like, wait a minute. You mean to tell me that, like, I don't have to, like, write a book the way I've been told that I've had to write a book, the one that's taken me 3 years to do my first book? And so my next book, I actually said, well, what if I take her thing and apply it to this idea that I had? And I actually end up getting the draft of my next book done in about 2.5 weeks.
Wow. Just
following her process. Yeah. Wow. And so from there on, I was like, oh, there's this whole other way we can do this that's way more fun and fast and efficient. And at the end of the day, too, it's the what I've been doing lately is, and you'll appreciate this, is we compare writing a book in a lot of ways is like making a movie. Because there's three mm-hmm. stages. There's pre-production, production, and post-production. And the thing that always blows everybody's mind when I share it with them is that production phase of you actually being on set, like, that's the shortest part of the whole process. You know, 2-year movie, there's only 3 months on set. So it's the same with the book. When you have the process, if you plan it correctly, you can actually get that book done in, you know, 10 to 15 hours of time. Now, it's a rough draft. You know, when you move that fast, it's very much rough, but it's, you know, when you look at a Marvel movie, and you see what they actually filmed, it's two guys in Halloween costumes fake fighting in front of a blue screen. It looks stupid. But by the time it goes through, you know, the post-production process, they're done. You're like, man, these guys are flying around space, beating the crap out of each other. So I always tell my clients, like, you need to look at yourself as you're directing your book. So we move fast in the first phase, because when you go into production, you can actually bring a whole team of other experts in that can do the polishing and doing a lot of the cleanup for you and get everything ready for you so that your time isn't involved. And so... yeah, there you go. Travis's movie making book process.
Oh, that sounds awesome. No, I'd love to talk to you about that because it sounds very fun. And it's true. I didn't even actually think about that as like a movie, but it really, when you were saying that, I was like, that's exactly how I did this. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there's also, like, one of the things that I hear people is like, I'm not really a writer. And I'm going, that's awesome, because Amazon doesn't have a best-selling writer category, but they do have a best-selling author category. And authors and writers are two different people, right? Writers are the guys that are stuck in a room by themselves, grinding it out. And an author is somebody who has a team that helps them get everything done. And so, again, right, just doing little small mental shifts now in terms of, like, consistency and being prolific in what you're doing, right? You don't have to do everything on your own. Right. You do the basis of it because it's your brand and your voice, but you can bring in other people to do stuff. So anyway, going on a little bit of a rant there. So what are two or three of the big takeaways in your book?
It's a great question. Basically, you can combine comedy and branding and digital marketing. I love creating comedic ads. I know we talked about this before we hopped on this, but like the Harman Brothers, I love what they do. I'm always urging our clients to try a comedic ad or a comedic video. And it doesn't need to be like a laugh out loud, you know, knee slapper, just not taking yourself super seriously. And there's, you know, there's ways to leverage comedy in your content. You could use, you know, pop culture trends. You could use self-deprecating humor. It's basically, you just don't want to, you want to be able to experiment. You want to just take things less seriously.
I came across a YouTube channel the other day. And it was he's in the Midwest somewhere, but it's just a kind of a Southern guy with the big, you know, the Southern accent. And he's got a car. He's a car dealership, and he's been doing ads where he finds the little clips that are like going super viral, and he'll start his ad with like the 3-second of whatever, and then it cuts to him making like some sort of crude comment about that thing, and he's like, I got the car over here. I was like, man, that is a great, and some of them are hilarious. And he's just on, and it's like one quick thing and then moving on, like coming down and get this car. And I was like, right. Simple, very simple, but it's definitely makes him stand out from, who do you want to buy a car from? The guy who's in the suit being serious, or the guy who's like making you have a good time?
Of course. And like, you know, in my book, I write about Because people are like, oh, I'm not funny. That's what I hear. I'm not funny. I'm not funny. Anyone can be funny or leverage comedy. You don't need to be this like stand-up comedian to do it. And I have like techniques in here that can help you kind of get out of your head and be more present. And it helps just be creative in general, not just like with comedy.
Well, it's funny when you say I'm not, it's funny when people say they're not funny, because the reality is they're not. When you sit there and say, be funny, nobody usually comes up and like on the spot, unless you're Robin Williams.
Do that. Yeah. Yeah.
But the thing is, if you follow them around, there's all kinds of periods in their life where they're making their friends and their family laugh hysterically. So you can actually be funny, but it's when you need to put the pressure on, of course, you know, even me having done a lot of stand-up comedy, people are like, hey, say funny. And I was like, dude, my brain right now is like on Elon Musk and Mars. You gotta give me a minute to transition before I can get to a punchline.
No, I hate when people do it. They're like, say something funny or like, tell me a funny joke. And I was like, ah, no, stop. And it's been like just being, one thing I do write about is just being more observational in everyday life. Specifically, if you're trying to come up with something funny for your brand or business, like notice things that drive you crazy or about like your competitors or, you know, your product, or, I mean, you don't want to like put down the products you're promoting, but just comedians are observe the world around them in a unique way. And I always talk about just like, and I say it in this, is that have like a note on you, or like I always write stuff down in my notes app, or like a voice note if you see something funny throughout the day, and then come back to it. Because if you keep doing it, it'll pile up. And comedy has a lot of psychological benefits too. So when people see a funny ad, they're in a better mood, they're releasing more, you know, serotonin, like even subconsciously, it does something.
Yeah. Awesome. All right. So if somebody's watching this and they're loving what you're talking about and they want to get involved with what you guys are doing, or they want to reach out, how do people find you and get engaged with what you got going on?
Yeah. So we're Wake and Make Media. It's not Wake and Bake. Everyone thinks that. Wake and Make Media. So we have our website, wakeandmakemedia.com. Our Instagram is Wake and Make Media. We're on Instagram, LinkedIn on Wake and Make Media. And then personally, you can find me at a lot of my channels are Megan Makes Comedy, or just Megan Nager, MEGAN NAGER. And I'm on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, all the apps.
So did you panic when TikTok went dark for like 36 hours?
No, if it was in the middle of when I was doing that Spotify series, I would have had a nervous breakdown. But since then, I went so hard on TikTok for 3 years that I honestly got burnt out from TikTok. Like my partner and I were putting up 4 videos a day, 7 days a week.
A lot.
So I just was like, take it away, honestly.
You're like, thank you. Megan, thank you so much. This has been a fascinating conversation. I really appreciate it. Appreciate your
time. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
You too.